Midway through this past week, I realized that this scripture that you've been able to see for the last little while is it's not the easiest one to read aloud publicly. It's no easy feat, is it? Helen and I decided that I would read it today because some of these names are awfully tough. And fortunately, there aren't too many Hebrew scholars in the room, maybe at least one, but other than that, nobody will know if I make a mistake. But before I read 1 Chronicles 25, 1 and 2, I want to frame it a little bit. Chronicles isn't a book that you hear preached on very often. In fact, it's the first 9 chapters of the book of Chronicles is all a bunch of genealogy and funny names. So I know your tendency when you see a text like this, even when you're reading it on your own, you just kind of tune it out. Today, don't tune it out, okay? I'm going to frame it a little bit for you so that you might understand what some of these names have to do with what we're called into today. I chose the scripture from Chronicles because beneath these layers of names and family trees, there is a fascinating discovery. But first, let me start with Chronicles 1 and 2. First and Second Chronicles, they're books about the kings of Israel and Judah, especially King David and King Solomon. Now, these books, while being very similar, their renditions are not the same by any means. You all know King David, right? Some nods if you know King David. Yeah, we know King David. Probably the version of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, the one that killed Goliath, right? The one who escapes the envy of King Saul, who's anointed king prematurely by the prophet, has an affair with Bathsheba and kills her husband off. Meanwhile, his own house is falling into ruins, right? You know this King David. Yeah. Mixture of valiant hero and outright sinner. Well, those stories and that image of King David are not exactly what's in Chronicles. Chronicles presents David as a mighty warrior, a hero, certainly, but it's from the perspective of the priests who most likely wrote Chronicles, who emphasize David's spiritual faithfulness to the Lord, centered around his recovery of the Ark of the Covenant. His only sin in Chronicles is wanting to take a census of his people. And this sin marks a turning point in David's life in Chronicles, where he turns all of his attention from that sin onward towards the spiritual preparation of the temple and the division of responsibilities for the priests, known as the Levites, if you've heard that word, who would work in the temple. Now, in our text this morning, specifically, he's assigning the musical jobs to the Levites. And so this is what he decides. David and the officers of the army also set apart for the service of the sons of Asaph and of Heman and of Jeduthun, who should prophesy with lyres, harps, and cymbals. The list of those who did the work and of their duties was of the sons of Asaph, Zakur, Joseph, Nethaniah, Azarela, the sons of Asaph, under the direction of Asaph, who prophesied under the direction of the king. Could you tell why I read that one? I only chose a very small portion of this text. In fact, the entirety of Chronicles 25 is devoted to making these assignments of all the different musical jobs for the positions in the temple. And it all comes down generally, though, to these two verses, which speak of these three Levites, Asaph, Heman, Jeduthun. They're kind of the fathers to the family trees, okay? And their sons, who will carry out the responsibility of prophesying with lyre, harp, and cymbal. Later in the text, in verses 7 and 8, it says, "They and their kindred, who were trained in singing to the Lord, all of whom were skillful, numbered 288. And they cast lots for their duties, small and great, teacher and pupil alike. Three families whose purpose was to make music in the Lord's house. Wow, what a job. A reminder maybe to all of us that ministers of music, very important. Yet musicians aren't always given the respect maybe they deserve in our culture today, huh? Maybe Asaph, Haman, and Jeduthun wouldn't have been so pleased that their families, their childrens all had to be musicians if they lived today. A couple jokes might illustrate my point. What's the difference between a musician and a large pizza? The large pizza can feed a family of four. This one's just as bad, I'm sorry. Oh my. Why didn't Handel go shopping? You know this one. He was broke. He was broke. Yeah, okay. Bad joke jar, thank you. As I read about these three families totaling their 288 men, all these sons making music, I couldn't help but think of the musical families of our culture. You know, the Jackson Five, they were only five, right? Or what about the Osmonds? I think there were seven singing Osmond kids, something like that. The Carpenters were only two. I know Audrey's family loves them. The half a dozen Duffys, they were only six, right? We hold some of those families in great regard, but imagine the families of Asaph, Haman, and Jeduthun, having 288 musicians in the family praising God in the temple. Just incredible. I can only imagine the family reunions that happened daily as they would jam with cymbal and lyre. But my imagination digresses. So, the priests who are writing all of this down in the book of Chronicles, they're wanting to highlight the spiritual zeal of King David. I believe they're also trying to remind future generations of what is most important in their communal life. And what is that most important thing? Well, maybe it's good worship. Good worship. The model king, King David, provided musicians for good worship, and so should every generation. At least that's what the priests in Chronicles seem to be saying. Worship well, people of Israel and Judah. Worship well, people of the church. Set up for yourselves leaders of music, and let them lead you in song that carries your praises to the heavens. And how blessed we are, huh? To have the leaders that we do, blessed by John Rudy and the Brethren Bells. If you didn't notice, they're growing in numbers down here. Their intricate harmonies of the bells and the chimes remind us of the complexity of the ordering of God's universe, so intentional with every note. Blessed by the Sunday at 9 praise band. For these talented people that join Pastor Audrey and I to lead a different kind of worship, casual, contemporary, I don't know the adjective for what we do, but it is varied rhythmically, stylistically, according to themes of the day. It draws us close to God in worship. Blessed by the temple choir, the back row singers, and Brother David, who provide regular anthems that pull us upward towards the kingdom of heaven. I also want to say how doubly blessed we are by the spiritual integrity that Brother David leads us with. Folks, we are blessed. Like King David, who appointed Levitical families to oversee the ministry of music, we understand why this is important. Without music, worship would just feel empty, incomplete. You would listen to spoken words, and they are most certainly important, but do they prepare you to experience God in the same way as hearing that favorite hymn or song, or by listening to something new that touches you in a different way. God intends for us to worship with song. God knows that music can touch our human spirit in a way that is deeply emotional, that often words don't get to. And I think this is why the scripture connects music and prophecy today. The families, remember in the text, they're told to prophesy with the lyre, with the harp, with the cymbal, to prophesy with song. Prophecy is more than somebody just predicting the future. Biblical prophecy, according to Justo Gonzalez, is speaking in the name of God, or speaking with God's inspiration. Speaking with God's inspiration or singing with God's inspiration is foundational to all our worship. We believe that the scriptures were inspired by God. Then can we also believe that often when we sing hymns and songs in worship and we feel that emotion, that spiritual power in them, that we join in the prophetic witness to the greatness of God? I believe we can. If, when we sing together in worship, you allow yourself to feel music soaking in lyric, then you participate in this divine connection that some would call prophecy, some would call prophetic worship. And so as we stand to sing our faith in this closing song today, I want you to sing out and join the Levites in their traditions for the last thousands of years. Join them prophesying with song. Praise to the Lord the Almighty. Let us stand.